Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where educators go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top leaders across the globe. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Danny Sunshine Bauer.
This is a bonus episode with Josh Spodek. Hi there, my name is Danny Sunshine Bauer. I'm a former classroom teacher and school administrator turned life and leadership coach. I'm also the host of this podcast where each week I share my conversation with top leaders from across the globe to help you accelerate your leadership development. In today's show with Josh Spodek, we explore his transition from teaching leadership exercises to teaching leadership and the environment. This podcast is very interesting, and I want to challenge the listener. We don't talk schools at all until the end of the podcast, and very, very briefly. But what Josh does is he expresses how he's used daily challenges for himself and for some of his students, and now through the podcast, to get people to move from experiences that seem like they're depriving or sacrificial, and based on new beliefs that we have formed, find the discovery and joy of going through actually pretty difficult stuff. It's absolutely applicable to the leader and thinking about his or her influence they want to have, not only within their school community, but personally as well. So I encourage you to listen through the entire podcast and really get all the gems that I believe Josh offers. Without further ado, thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. And before we jump in the episode, let's take some time to thank our show sponsors. Today's podcast is brought to you by School Spirit Vending. I know the owner and founder of School Spirit Vending. He is a personal friend and he brings hassle-free fundraising to your school. But even better, Matt has written a top 10 school fundraising ideas of 2017. He's given it away completely free. Get it at schoolzonepodcast.com. That's the top 10 school fundraising ideas of 2017 at schoolzonepodcast.com. Well, hey there, better leaders. I am here again with Josh Spodek, second time on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. The first time, I'm going to point you back to episode number 79. That was released in February of 2017, first time we connected. We talked a lot about his work teaching leadership as actual exercises you can do and execute on to improve your leadership every single day. Josh is an adjunct professor at NYU, a leadership coach and workshop leader for Columbia Business School, columnist for Inc., founder of Spodek Academy, and author of Leadership Step-by-Step. There's a more extensive bio that will be available for you in the show notes, or you could go back and listen to episode 79 if you haven't heard that show episode yet. Josh, thanks again for joining me a second time on the show.
I'm glad to be here. This is I really enjoy our conversations, both vocal like this and also online and the stuff we have going on Twitter and things like that.
So episode 79, this is a bonus episode, but since then, like 7 months, 50 episodes have been released. A lot of changes have happened in our lives. I am now recording from Antwerp, Belgium, and you have an exciting new project that you're about to release to the world. And this show will be released same time what we're going to discuss will be released. And what I'm interested in is talking about what this project is, and then secondly, how you've transitioned from teaching leadership and then these exercises you can act on to transitioning to leadership and the environment. So let's start there, Josh.
So I think I want to start with a little context in that, you know, I have a PhD in physics, so mm-hmm. I spent a good, just about 10 years of my life really into studying and publishing science and doing research. And then when I left to start my first company and then went to business school and started learning about leadership and found this big passion in leadership, it was all off on the side for a while, except for one thing that for me, science fundamentally is about the beauty of nature. I really love exploring the beauty of nature. And, you know, some people think of like lab coats and lab rats and equipment and mathematics and stuff. Yeah, that's part of it. But underneath all of that, it's for me, the beauty of nature, maybe some, and my own curiosity. And so I've always been pretty into conservation and reducing my impact on the environment where it messes it up and things like that. So, you know, I've always been one, like my, I turn off the lights when I leave the room and I use public transportation and I avoid all the sorts of things. And then over the years, there've been a couple things that really made a big difference in my life. Or rather, I should say, there's a couple transitions that I made more recently as global warming, pollution, overpopulation, extinction, all these things which are overlapping but distinct. They're, you know, increasingly front page of the newspaper. And, you know, in the past couple of weeks, we've had these big hurricanes and you can't say for sure that that's from global warming, but we certainly project that that's going to happen more and more and more. And so as a reaction, there were a couple of things that I've done. One is that I noticed a lot of my trash in my house came from food packaging. I don't like all the pollution that I was born into a world with a lot of pollution. Like when I was a kid, there was the, what they call the crying Indian public service announcement of, so people my age, I'm 46. So people around my age and older will know it. And, you know, since then we've only accelerated our garbage production in this world. So I gave myself this challenge to pollute less, to buy no food where I'd have to throw away packaging afterward. And at first it felt like it was going to be deprivation and sacrifice because I'm going to get less food, less variety. And for the first couple months, for the first week, it was a big challenge. Could I do it? And I went 2.5 weeks with zero food packaging, buying no food without with packaging. So, and I didn't know how to do it. I was like, what am I going to do? Like I couldn't, I didn't do it for a long time because I was planning and planning and planning. And eventually I just said, too much planning. I know I'm not going to die. Let's just give it a shot. And so I went 2.5 weeks and was able to not buy any packaged food. I did use up some packaged food from in my cupboards that I didn't buy that was already there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you go to the store and you're like, am I going to die or am I going to find something here? And it was, you know, you basically go to the fresh fruits and vegetables and produce and you get that stuff. And then I have a bulk food store near me so I could bring bags with me and get nuts and seeds and legumes, which I could then cook at home. After, and then I decided this was really working well for me. So I'm going to keep doing this. And after I just, so I didn't go to, I didn't keep it zero, but very little packaging. And to the point where now I throw out my household garbage about twice a year. And that's not using garbage bags. That's using this little canvas bag that's like significantly smaller than a plastic bag, than you, the typical plastic bags you get, like a hefty thing. And I won't lie, the first 6 months or so, I was even eating a lot of really bland food because I didn't know how to cook from just basic fruits and vegetables. Sorry if this is too long. Is this too long of an answer?
No, because I find these answers when you go into depth fascinating. And that's why I enjoy as the host of this show, I want to offer so much more than just the granular day-to-day operations of school and leadership. And there's so many principles to be learned here. So this type of depth is what we're looking for.
Okay, great. Because I love talking about it. And okay, so back to the story is that I was, it was a good 6 months when I was just basically like steaming vegetables and putting salt and pepper on or frying stuff with garlic and onions. That's not bad. A meal here or there, but if that's all you're having for a while, it was getting kind of boring. But after a while, I started realizing how to mix things together in ways that worked, that, you know, for my taste. And also, I should say, I went to CSA, which is a community-supported agriculture, mm-hmm. where every week I would go, a farm not far out of New York where I live brings in a truckload of stuff and they take it to this drop-off point on 16th Street. So I'm on 10th Street. So I walk 6 blocks and I pick up, you know, there's all these boxes and it's like one thing of celery and one thing of cabbage and one thing of, you know, whatever. And you pick up like a bunch of vegetables for the week. And my rule was, no throwing away any vegetables. Nothing goes to waste. And so the stuff was really tasty, but I didn't know how to do it. And so it took me about 6 months, maybe a year before I was mixing stuff together really well, just from experience. And I got a pressure cooker along the way. And that really changed. That was a revolution because now I can cook beans from dry in 5-10 minutes and they're better than canned. And so I eat legumes almost every meal. And after that year of transition, my food is delicious. And I'm not saying it's for everyone, but actually I've been getting friends to rate it, to review it. And if you want, I can send you the link. It's like the reviews are really, really good. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I've never taken any courses. It's just me saying, do I want to have bland food or tasty food? I'll go for tasty. And actually, yeah, yesterday I made this. It was so good. These white beans I'm kind of exploring, and collard greens and carrots. And I made this soup. It's really good. And jalapenos, they're really good. I like spicy. And so the upshot of all of this is that what started looking like deprivation and sacrifice after a period of transition became a discovery of joy. Like, my food is more delicious than ever. It's cheaper than ever. What I've learned is that healthy is not more expensive. Not knowing how to cook is expensive. If you know how to cook and you buy stuff in season, you're getting all the stuff that's like the most delicious and the cheapest price. And then, and it's more convenient because of the pressure cooker. I can make like 5 meals at a time. And so in the middle of that, I had another transition, which was that I saw this a scientist speaking at Harvard. He was a Caltech trained physicist who teaches at Oxford. And he was talking about how much pollution different things cause. And he said that a flight from New York to LA and back, round trip, flying coach. And there's a lot of variables here, depending on how much you drive in a year and different things like that. But it's roughly a year of driving. Mm. And I was like, that's way more than I thought. And that really messed with my identity as someone who, living in New York, I don't have a car. And I thought, you know, I must have a low impact. And then I'm like, wait a minute, all this flying is like a big impact. And I did what I think most people would do when faced with facts that undermine your opinion of yourself based on an incorrect knowledge, which is I suppressed that information. I put it way back in the background and acted like I didn't know it because I wanted to keep traveling. I like traveling. And the next time I traveled, I this inner conflict was gnawing at me. And I said, when I change my behavior with the food, it worked out really well. I'm going to change my behavior with flying. So I said, just arbitrarily, just based on the year of driving thing, I said, I'm not going to fly for 1 year. And see, I don't know how I'm going to do it. My book is going to come out in that year. I got family all over the world. My work, you know, I travel for all sorts of things. I get invited to speak at different things. And, you know, for some reason, when people hear this, they think, oh yeah, for you, maybe that would be easy. Maybe you have a life where it's easy, but you have to understand, for me, I have family all over the place and my job requires me to do these things. I'm like, yeah, of course. I know that. Everyone knows that. We're all like that. I mean, everyone who's above a certain level of status, a certain level of income and so forth, people travel a lot. And everyone's got their special snowflake reason why they believe that they're like somehow special. But the reason why planes produce so much on the whole is because so many people are flying. All right. So again, the beginning of that year was really brutal. And I still, you know, I didn't know how I was going to handle not having a book tour to try to promote my book. And my uncle died in that period too. And I had to go visit, you know, I wanted to visit the family and I did and figure out how to do it without flying. And it was just like the other experience, it was with the food. It was at first really difficult. My sister, she told me, hey, Josh, I'm bringing my kids to Tokyo. We got round trip $800. And my first thought was, that's really cheap. I'm going to go. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, wait a minute. No, I'm living by my values and I want to go without doing this. And after a transition period, it's become one of the best decisions I've ever made. I mean, among other things, I've learned that, you know, the value of travel, things like adventure and culture and cuisine and things like that, those things aren't out there. They're in here, if you know what I mean. You can get adventure. You don't have to fly to get adventure. You don't have to fly to get different culture. You can create those things. And what I've learned is not to depend on these other things and realize that for most of human history, for 300,000 years of Homo sapiens, people couldn't fly and they weren't miserable. And just because we can fly now doesn't mean that you have to be miserable not flying. On the contrary, I've learned to create these things. I've learned to create adventure. I've learned to find culture. Like, one of the big things I learned was, I'm not going to go into all the depth of, I can if you want, but like how to find different cultures and the diversity of meeting your neighbor. Mm. And it starts looking like, just like after you start eating food that's all fresh, that you made, that you know the farmer, that you visited the farm where the stuff came from. Or if when I go to the farmer's market, like I talk to the people and like I learn like why things are in season and so forth. And you look at a Twinkie and you're like, what was I thinking? I mean, that is like, look, I used to like Ben and Jerry's. I used to like all sorts of things. And I know that it will still bring me the pleasurable feeling on my tongue that it used to. But will it improve my life? Or more importantly, have I found stuff that I like more? And this is, to me, almost the definition of improving your life, is if you look at something that you used to like a lot, and now you replace it with something that you like more, and the old thing is still just as delicious, but the new thing is more delicious and improves your life more. That's, to me, improving your life. And that's what happens when you live by your values. Okay, so these two transitions I went through of not eating packaged food or avoiding packaged food and then avoiding flying. In the middle of that, we have an election in which a guy who says that the climate change is a hoax gets elected. More importantly, tens of millions of people voted for him. And I realized I don't have it in me to wait 4 years for this to change. Mm-hmm. And people sometimes ask me, hey, Josh, do you actually lead? And I say, yeah, I'm teaching. That's leadership. And they're like, yeah, well, every professor teaches. And I thought, you know, it's time for me to take a leadership role out in the world. And there's something huge that's missing in an environment. Is climate change is one issue. Pollution is another. I don't care how much, whether you believe climate change is a hoax or not. You don't want mercury in your food.
Right.
And certainly you don't want mercury in your kids' food. And there's extinctions and overpopulation and deforestation and natural resources being drawn down. You don't like extra hurricanes killing people. No one wants that. And you don't want droughts and you don't want the groundwater to be depleted for when there are droughts and things like that. So the water table. So there's a lot of people saying you should change, but they're not changing themselves. They still fly their jets, their Learjets. Like, I'm thinking Leonardo DiCaprio took a lot of heat for this. So same with Al Gore. And there's a lot of people spreading science, but science and education and facts rarely change behavior. This country and this world has more information about nutrition than ever. We know more about diseases of excess than ever. And we have more obesity and diabetes and heart disease than ever. We know what to do, but we can't stop ourselves. And I think as much as I support more science, I support more education, I support more legislation, I support people sharing what works and so forth. But I think what's missing is leadership in the style of Nelson Mandela, of Vaclav Havel, of Martin Luther King, of Gandhi. And that is influencing people to change their behavior, not just to change it because you've passed this law that they have to, although I support that in the end, after you get popular support. Before you have popular support, which this country doesn't have, this country, people talk about reducing their impact, but talk to them about not flying, talk to them about driving less. They really don't like that. They mm-hmm. really push back. And politicians, they know to follow people's behavior. That's what tells you how they're going to vote, not what they say when it's in conflict with what they do. And try to influence people's behavior, you're going to get massive pushback in a form of intense emotion. And I said, this is it. I'm going to take on leadership in the environment. I'm going to try to influence people's behavior. I'm not going to stop people from passing laws. I support that. In fact, I think the end goal is to get people to pass laws, to get markets to change, to get technology to change and so forth faster than it would otherwise. Because, you know, it's great when people get an electric car because it's economical, but there are a lot of things that aren't just economical changes that also people aren't doing. And so I looked at, like, do I want to take on this challenge? It looks like really brutal, because while it's not going to be the sort of thing like Martin Luther King and Vaclav Havel, the type of pushback that they got in the form of jail and things like that, this isn't a go to jail risk, but it's really hard and people push back really hard. And I thought, you know, these past two things where I decided to live by my values and act on them, there was a transition period that was very difficult, but on the far side of it, my life was way better as a result. And so I decided I'm going to become the Martin Luther King, the Nelson Mandela, the Gandhi, the Vaclav Havel of the environment. And if that sounds crazy to you, because it sounded crazy to me the first time I started thinking that way, then you do it better. If someone can do it better, by far, I'm more than happy for someone to do it better than me. But I don't see people doing it. And in the meantime, I'm going to do it as best I can. And if I get us over the finish line, great. You know, to keep us down below 2 degrees by 2050. And most importantly, for people to live better lives in the process, to enjoy life more, to enjoy their relationships more, that to increase their self-awareness, all these things. That's the goal, because my life is better for these changes. It's kind of neat to, when my trash bag gets filled, I walk down the hall and empty it down the trash chute. It's October 9th today. The last time I did that was June 4th. My canvas bag is, I'd say it's about a third full. So July, August, September, October. So that's 4 months, a third full. So maybe it'll take me 12 months. Maybe it'll take me a year to fill up my trash this time. But most importantly, my food is more delicious and I've saved money and I've saved time and people come over to my place more. So it's more social, it's more community. Likewise with the flying, I've I haven't gone, like I've turned down a couple trips, but I've also learned to meet, I've met my neighbors more. I've met people here more, and I've had no less adventure, no less new culture, no less new cuisine mm-hmm. than before. Mm-hmm. So step one was a mistake, was I thought if I'm going to be the Martin Luther King of the environment, I better prepare my, I have a dream speech. That's oversimplifying things. But as a professor, I could get a lot of my alumni, the students from my courses together, and I could get space at NYU. So I gave a series of talks at NYU of leadership in the environment. And I quickly, that's how I learned the minefield of trying to influence people. And I realized that trying to influence dozens of people at a time is really hard if you haven't influenced one. And so I scaled back and said, let's see if I can work with one person at a time. And when I started, there's one past student of mine who took it on himself to take on a personal challenge that I have this personal challenge of mine, which is to, not a personal challenge, it's one of my sidchas. One of my daily habits is I pick up at least one piece of trash per day from the street and put it in a trash can, or if it's recyclable, in a recycling bin. And it doesn't lower the amount of trash. It just concentrates it, but it's something. And so he decided to, he took it on himself to pick up 10 pieces of trash for the month of June. This is several months ago. And the transformation that he went through was really phenomenal. In fact, I quoted him in Inc. for my July 4th article because it was so, it inspired me back so much, the changes that he went through and the things that he learned about life and people and responsibility and values. And then that he took it on himself to do the next challenge after that on his own to reduce his meat. And he went through this transition of first he felt weird picking trash up. Now he feels weird passing trash by without picking it up. Which I have to say, I feel that too. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't like being annoyed by trash, but if trash is there, and I wish it weren't as much as it was, you know, if litter is there, I'd rather feel motivated to do something about it. In any case, that got me to think, all right, let's work one-on-one. And that got me, finally, all these people, I'd done all these podcasts and people were advising me to do a podcast. I didn't just want to have conversations and record them. I wanted to, it would only if it's meaningful. And so step one was do these talks that, how do I say it? It's not that they went bad. It's not that they went well. I learned a lot from them. There we go. That's a good euphemism. They were great learning experiences, not to start that way. And then to, now I'm doing this podcast, which is Leadership in the Environment, which is where I interview people such as you, people who are leaders, people who are environmental people. And I ask them all to be on at least twice. The first one, we talk about them and establish who they are so that listeners understand who they're hearing from. And then I ask them to take on a personal challenge. And over the dozens or so that I've done so far, I've learned to give them a little, to relieve some constraints and impose certain constraints. What the biggest one is that the challenge doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to solve all the world's problems overnight. Because so many people come back with, yeah, if I do this, but the whole meat, oil, whatever industry doesn't change its thing, then what I do doesn't matter. All right, I'm just asking you to take on a personal challenge to see what happens. And so it does have to change something. I have to mention, I ask people what about the environment they care about first. And I say, you pick your challenge. I'm not going to give it to you based on what matters to you, something that you value. So it's something that they pick and it doesn't have to be permanent, but I ask them to consider making it permanent, but they can do it for a certain period of time. So most people do something like not eating meat for a month or take public transportation more than they used to, or avoiding food packaging, things like that. And the second interview is that we talk about their experience. And it's funny, I first thought the second conversations were all going to be people saying, wow, that was great. I'm so glad you got me to do it. Thank you, Josh. It was really a great experiment. Now I want to do more. And I do get some people like that. And that's really amazing. I love when that happens. And I hope that listeners hear that and think, oh man, that thing that I've been thinking of, I should do it because it improved my life. Then there are a lot of people who come through and they say, Josh, I started doing it. And then this challenge came up that I didn't expect and it got really hard. And actually, I'm finding that those, I think, are more intriguing because people hear that these people who are leaders and leadership authors and gurus, and I got TED talkers and things like that, and it's not so easy. And these people who you think, oh, they can do a lot, all sorts of things because they're, you know, if you get like 20 million TED talk views, like Dan Pink, it's not just because you've done that doesn't mean that it's easy. And then you get to hear them going through these challenges in their lives in real time. And it's really cool for these great leaders to become more approachable and to become more human. And you get to hear their struggle and you get to hear their triumphs, but also their challenges. There's one guy, he was a professional wrestler and he's got this podcast called, what it was originally called, Wrestling with Success. And it was Jim Harshaw. It's called now Success Through Failure. And so he takes on this challenge, which is to take public transportation more. And he realizes quickly after our conversation, but not long after he starts trying it, it takes more time than driving. And he's got four kids and he doesn't want to spend so much time away from his family. And he's like stuck. Like, what do I do? I don't want to do the challenge, but I don't want to give up on the challenge. And so this is what's really cool about this. This is that he meets with his family, sits them all down, his wife and his four kids. And he says, you know, I took on this challenge. I really want to do it, but it's taking me away from you guys. And let's make this a group thing that affects all of us. What can we do about it? And so they talk about it for a while. Mm. And they came up with, there's lots of things that like kids' sports and things that they do with their friends. And they switch all of that or a lot of that to carpooling. And it's a group thing that the family does. So now they carpool a lot more than they used to. And it's not the same as taking public transportation, but it might actually be saving more fuel. And this stuff about a lot of people are nervous about involving other people and like, am I going to bother them? Am I going to seem like I'm nagging or getting in the way? And on the contrary, the other families are enjoying it too, because they're some of the time they don't have to drive and they're getting to the kids spend more time with each other. And it becomes the challenge of working with other people has become the opposite of a challenge. It's become a community thing. Actually, that's community is probably the biggest thing that's popped up in here, is that how much not polluting leads you to, and I use polluting as like a catch-all for all of the things of global warming and overpopulation, you know, all the different issues as a catch-all. All this stuff leads people to spending more time with people face-to-face, in person, touching and hugging each other and things like that, and communicating with much more interaction than online. And so this has become a tremendously, it's this challenge that I didn't want to take on for the same reason most people don't want to take on. It's hard.
Yeah.
And you know, people don't like it. They don't like the transition, but at least so far they've liked coming out on the far side of it. And that's the most common thing that I've heard is, Josh, this was harder than I expected. And thank you for getting me to do it. Now, there are people who have not made it, there've been so far two people who have said, Josh, this is just, I wanted to do this. It's not the right time. There's too much stress in my life. And the things that they're doing are, to my mind, not that big of a deal. But leadership is not about your values. It's about the person's value. It is about your values, but the leadership, the influence comes from the other person. And if they have stuff going on that is keeping this out of their mind, and I say, what, this is easy, that just makes it harder. One of the things I think people who listen to my podcast, to a lot of episodes, will, I think, hear my growth and development of learning leadership techniques and what works and what doesn't work and listening. And you know, some people come on and they talk about environment, some weird, to me, weird way, like new agey. And I'm like, okay. I come from the hard sciences. And to me, it's not about like this feel good stuff. And I usually get turned off by this feel good stuff because it's usually like gets in the way of science, but that's my views. But they're seeing it their way. And I got to respect their way if I want to influence them, if I want them to be part of this. So it's really interesting. And then I always think of like, what audiences can I reach that I'm not reaching now? Because I'm starting off with lots of best-selling authors and TED talkers. And, you know, I'm a pretty, what's the word? You know, I come from a strong academic background. I'm a thinker. And so we got a lot of thinkers in there. But I got to transition over. Like, it's coming up soon. It looks like I'm going to have a Victoria's Secret model. And that's coming from a totally different angle and a totally different audience. But I think will be very influential. And I've been talking for a long time. Sorry.
No, nothing to apologize for. I appreciate, like I said, the depth of the response. And there's so many aspects to unpack. And I think some things I just want to at least highlight for the listener that were powerful to me. And maybe they uncovered a similar understanding from what you shared as well. But, you know, you mentioned community and more time face-to-face. And even Jim Harshaw's family, inviting them into the mix. So inviting your staff, inviting your people, inviting your family to solve the problem. But all these challenges are increasing that face-to-face connection with people and an increase in community and community responses to challenges. And leadership, you know, one of the reasons I do the masterminds and work with school leaders specifically is because I know how isolating it is. And so it's interesting how, you know, this influencing people on a one-on-one basis with what you're doing with the podcast really begins to start to bubble out and have this ripple effect because they invite their communities into solving the problem. So that was a big takeaway for me. And it was important to hear too, just how hard the challenges are, right? Even for these top performers with millions of views on YouTube and TED Talks and things like that, or just, you know, what you shared in terms of how you've changed your approach to cooking. And it wasn't an overnight success. You know, what I think I heard you say is 6 months of bland food and learning the process of how to mix things together. But at some point you had some critical mass of experience or something, and you figured it out. And the irony and the paradox of deprivation and sacrifice actually transitioning to discovery and joy is what you said. It's just such a beautiful idea of how limiting yourself and things that used to bring you a lot of satisfaction actually makes way for new experiences that you find even more valuable. You know, I think of like a plant, right? That you prune and you physically cut it back, right? So that it could produce new growth. I'm sure that doesn't feel great. Or when we work out, right, and stretch and break down our muscles so that they grow, it hurts. It hurts real bad. But the results that we get on the other side are so fantastic.
Yeah, I would say that I like those views and I think of them sometimes. The big thing for me is that, all right, there's some people who don't believe global warming. They don't believe there's any problems with the environment. And they think maybe the best thing to do is just live however you want and, you know, everyone else be damned. That's their problem. That's not my audience. I'm talking to people who have looked at the science and feel that there are issues that there are problems if we don't take care of things. And I want to help them live according to their values because by and large, we Americans I've never met anyone who didn't say, I want to leave the world a better place than they found it. And yet we're all doing things that make the world a worse place than we found it. Mm-hmm. And for generations, we could say, well, maybe we were wrong. Maybe we'll find out that there's other things that we can do. Maybe blah, blah, blah. That time's past. It's inarguably past. I believe it's inarguably past. I guess some people can argue about it, but it seems to me that everything, all the data points to it's over, that time has passed. We must act. We must change our behavior if we want to avoid some really catastrophic results. And 10 years ago, 5 years ago, we could say maybe later. Now, if we say maybe later, it's like, it's in our lifetimes. Even if you don't care about yourself and even if you don't care about your kid, you probably care about yourself. Okay. If you're living one way, but you value a different behavior, that internal conflict is brutal. It really sucks to live a life, to do something that's against your values. And when I say deprivation and sacrifice, it's by the old values that you're actually behaving by. The new values look like deprivation and sacrifice, but that's just because you don't know what it's like in the new way of looking at things. And when you get there, you realize it looked like deprivation and sacrifice from one perspective, but it's not. It is if you replace travel with staring at the wall and just like doing nothing.
Not so adventurous.
But that's not what you replace it with. You replace it with how to make my life better. If you replace packaged food with, I don't know, just bland food, and then yeah, it's going to make your life worse. But what you do is the challenge forces you to say, what are my new values? What are the values that I really want to live by? How do I live by them? And what I'm saying, what I've discovered is that living by those values improves your life. That's what living by your values means. Value, evaluate. What's good? What's bad? And when you live by your values, it means you live by what you consider good. It means that what you were living by before was not as good. You just didn't, I can speak for myself. I didn't realize it because it's really easy to go to the store, buy some packaged food, go to the restaurant. Like now I'm going to go to restaurants. Restaurants are so disappointing to me. And New York City has some really great restaurants, but the chefs know how to get people coming back. Salt, sugar, fat. And that's what's in the food and making it look really pretty, which is kind of cool. But what they don't do is what I've learned to do, which is like to find the nuances and of the vegetables and the fruits, which have much more flavor than like they have more. There's more flavor than sugar has. Sugar will get you to keep eating more. So you'll keep going back if you don't know any better and if you don't have anything better. But these nuances and textures and flavors and stuff that mix together really well, there's more to it than that. Just like it's kind of cool to go to see the Eiffel Tower. But it's also kind of cool to meet people who live near you who come from as varied backgrounds as people who, you know, you go to Paris, you're going to be talking to a lot of people who are on the internet just as much as you. It's not as rich as relationships can be when you spend more time with people around you that you wouldn't have otherwise.
Conferences, piles of flyers, getting stuck in endless email lists and never-ending calls. There's an easier way to sort through and identify the best school fundraisers. School Spirit Vending proudly presents the top 10 school fundraising ideas of 2017. It's a guide of the top fundraising companies hand-picked from the best podcasts. As an added bonus, this guide lists 5 resource companies that would add tremendous value to your community, school, and students. The best part is that School Spirit Vending is giving the guide away completely free. Are you ready to simplify the search? Download the free guide at schoolzonepodcast.com.
Josh, I really appreciate you being on the show for a second time, and we'll have linked up for the listener, you know, your Twitter account, your website, links to your books and online courses. You mentioned some of the reviews of your cooking too. We could put that in there for the listeners as well. But I think the last question I'd like to close with, you know, you have a sense of these values, right? And you've really highlighted the importance of living a life aligned to your values and the joy, right? And the discovery that is connected to that, as opposed to the strife and the challenges of living misaligned with your values. But I'm curious, like, when you are into the process and it gets hard, how do you keep going? Because, you know, the challenges you've set for yourself are formidable and they evidently get hard. How do you not give up so that you can get to the discovery and the joy?
So I have two answers. First, I want to point out that the values, you point out discovery and joy. By far the most important one, the biggest one that comes to me with changing my behavior with respect to the environment is delicious. I've never met anyone who doesn't like delicious. And that's the big one, because that was the first big change, was my food is more delicious and I love delicious. But ultimately, as time has gone on, it's become much more empathy, compassion, friendliness, things like that. Those are the big ones. Joy is a big one for myself, but I feel like empathy and compassion are really the big ones, because it's not the environment in some abstract sense. It's people that get affected by the environment, and to some extent animals, but much more people. I mean, I don't like that I grew up in a polluted world and I don't want to make a more polluted world. So it's the people that are affected by my decisions and choices and things like that. So the two answers for your question, see, it's different now because I've been through these before. So I know I don't have to take anything on faith. I know from experience that when I change my behavior, when I sense there's this value that I'm not acting by, I know that I have to, from the past, these stories that I've just told, I know what's going to happen. I know it's going to be a challenge, but on the far side of the challenge, I'm going to like it more. So now I know from experience, it's very easy to do these things when I discover new things, like the picking up the trash. That's the most recent of all the things. It's not like I'm like, I love picking up trash. That's not my thing. I don't like having my hands on trash, but I know that it changes you and you see things differently and you behave differently. Okay. But what about at the beginning? What about with the food packaging? Then I didn't have all these past things to fall back on. You know, it wasn't that I was thinking I was deprived. I was just thinking, this is what I care about. It wasn't, an outside observer would say I was not doing things. And in fact, I describe it as not doing something. But internally, I was doing something. I was challenging myself. If you want to stop eating packaged food, a lot of people ask me, what do you do? Like, what should I do? And I tell them there's two answers to that. One of them is what you think you're asking, and it's not going to help, which is I can list out what I have for breakfast, lunch, and dinner and so forth. But we have different tastes. You're going to eat different stuff than I will. So my answer, that's just like, you know, in the teaching, that's like traditional teaching. Here's a bunch of information. It doesn't actually give you the skills to do it yourself. If you really want to, and if you don't want to know the answer, then it wastes my time to give you that answer. If you really want to know the answer, active learning, education, experience, what will give you the answer is this. Tell yourself you go for a week without packaged food and you got two options, die or figure it out. I can tell you, you're not going to die. I mean, you can go for a week without any food, just water, but you'd go to the store and you look at the shelf and you say, oh, I can't get any of this stuff. What am I going to do? And you go over and say, oh, okay, here's all this produce. I can get that because there's no packaging. And then you figure it out. And that's how you learn. And I made a game of it. It was kind of like a little challenge, like how long can I go? And by the time I had my first can after those 2.5 weeks, I got a can and I opened it of these tomatoes. And I was like, why did I melt aluminum? Why did I pay someone to melt aluminum so that I could get something that's inferior to fresh? I could have just skipped tomatoes in that particular recipe or gone out and bought some and gotten some fresh tomatoes or something like that. But by that point, the transition was sufficient for me. It was still a lot more bland food, but it was about my values at that point. And what can I do? It's about what you can do, not about what you avoid. And you start realizing all these resources out there. I mean, most people in the world can't afford to pay all the stuff, like the stuff that we get in restaurants and all the stuff. And are they miserable for that? I doubt it. And for most of human history, there was no plastic, let alone packaged food. And people weren't regretting it. They weren't like, oh, I wish this stuff could be packaged. They didn't know. But just because we know that it could be packaged doesn't mean that we need packaging. And then, yeah, it's really what do I value? Exploring yourself. What do I want in my life? How helpless am I to do what I think is right? How powerful am I to do what I think is right? Like, to speak in a context of education and school, to people who are listening to us in this conversation, probably they've learned that just giving people a bunch of information isn't nearly as effective for them to learn as to give them challenges for them to live by. And do I want to learn or not? Do I want to live by, this is how I'm going to learn. And the more valuable often means more challenging. And that's, so likewise, more challenging means more valuable. It's not reframing, because it's more like discovering that frame. It's not like I tried to look at it that way. It just emerged. What do you expect of your students? Do you want them to try? Do you want them to learn? Do you want them to take on challenges? Do you give them challenges for them to not learn? Like, do you hold back on giving them challenges because they might be like, I don't know what to do? No, you give them challenges exactly because they're going to have to struggle with those sorts of things. Do we value educating them? Then do we also value educating ourselves? The growth and the learning and the discovery these changes I've made have been the best things I've done in my life. Outside of, you know, my personal relationships with my family and some of the very special people in my life, it's like these are the changes that have been, and I've done a lot of amazing things in my life. And the podcast is to share that as a starting point. You know, I want to move past the podcast when I can, but that's the starting point, is to share that of the joy, the discovery that people find. And for it's there for everyone. You're going to save money and time doing it, and you're going to get more delicious. Who doesn't want that?
More delicious is always a great place to end. It's so, yeah. so tasty. And like I said, your reviews of your cooking, and then there's a bunch of helpful links, you know, that people can start going down that rabbit hole and see, you know, what you've explored and uncovered for yourself. And I just love that last idea too, broadly, about the difference between disposing knowledge in terms of one way of quote unquote educating, and then creating opportunities where people can be active. And so you do this through the podcast with the challenge. You do this through your book, Leadership Step by Step, with the exercises that people work through at the end of each chapter. And it's experiential learning. And it takes root in a person's soul. Then they get that change. And it's just such a powerful idea and delicious idea to end on, because thinking about your students, I mean, we are existing to serve our kids and to give them this proper education. And is it more of a sit and get and traditional sort of experience? Or are you helping them be completely immersed, right, action-oriented, and changing not only themselves, but hopefully applying that to a bigger and broader problem, and actually feeling the value of giving back and making the world a better place. And to your point, Josh, leaving the world a better place for the people that follow. So thank you so much for joining me on the show. And like I said, we'll link up your contact information, the reviews of your delicious cooking, and then you know, the book, which I've worked through, but you also have a bunch of courses too that take people into even more experiential and deeper learning for themselves. So appreciate your time here on the show again.
Thank you very much. And yeah, as you can tell, I love this stuff. And if people want to contact me about it, I'd love for that. You know, the podcast is called Leadership in the Environment. And my blog is at joshuaspodek.com. I think you're going to have all those links. And soon there will be a page where people can put up their own personal challenges. And probably by the time this is out, it'll be there. And people can take on their own and they can write what it was like and they can read what others was like. So if anyone's thinking, yeah, I'd like to do a personal challenge, they can go to that page and they can find one. They can see what others have done and they can put up, I'm going to take this one on, and then it'll email you back, say, how was it? And you can write a testimonial, things like that. It's to build community.
It's awesome. Thank you, Josh. And Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember, life's 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Josh. Be better starting today. Head on over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Josh in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up. You'll get highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. And one last time, Josh, thanks again for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Better Leaders, just a few more things before you take off. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show. This helps gives the show some social proof, aka iTunes juice, and encourages new people to listen to the show. If you are a social media junkie, share your biggest takeaway from the show and feel free to tag me on Twitter or Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer. Take the letters, switch them around, and create something interesting and new. That's how I got it. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Do you want to get a short email from me every Sunday where I share the best resources I have come across, links to interesting articles, books, blogs, and podcasts that have challenged my thinking, and a quote that's inspired me and will inspire you as well? If you'd like access to this resource, head over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and join the newsletter at the top of the page. Over 1,000 school leaders subscribe, and I think you'll benefit from it too. In the newsletter, I also share when a new blog or podcast comes out, as well as different opportunities to work with me. Thanks again for listening to the show.